It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. My name is Jet Lacey. I'm filling in again for the week, and we have a fantastic show for you today. This is probably the show that I'm most excited about ever since the first week that I started even working the board for Ernest, and we had Lou Rockwell on the show. But we have an awesome show today. It's Thursday, February 4th, 2010. And my guest today is someone that many of you may not have heard of, and his name is John Ross. You know, I'm so very excited about today's show, and I'm not the only one. You know, for instance, when I told Ernest I had booked John on the show, he said, "Man, I want to interview John Ross." You know, he's an author, an investment broker, a financial advisor in St. Louis, Missouri. He has degrees in English and economics from Amherst College in Amherst, Mass. He's also a certified personal protection instructor and the author of the life-changing book entitled Unintended Consequences. You know, there's many people that believe it's the Atlas Shrugged of the freedom movement and of the gun culture. He also wrote Self-Defense Laws and Violent Crime Rates in the United States, which was the first published work to assess the effect of concealed carry laws on violent crime in America. He has also been training men and women in rifle, pistol, and defensive firearm use for over 25 years and has offered instruction and familiarization courses in more advanced weaponry for the last 20 years. So, welcome, John. Are you here with me?
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. Again, I'm really excited to have you on here. And so, can you give us a little bit more information aside from what I've told everybody? You know, tell us a little bit about yourself. And
Well, one thing that needs to be updated is I've gotten out of the investment business after over 25 years in it, and I'm concentrating full-time on writing and teaching shooting.
Wow. Well, I apologize for that. I stole it right from your website.
well, it needs to be updated. It's a fairly recent change.
Yeah, there's not much money to be invested out there nowadays. I imagine the business is down quite a bit.
Well, I've been out of it for a little bit, but I just had enough of that.
So,
I'm doing classes every week and continuing to write and been talking about running for Congress again. There's some people that have been pushing me towards that. And we might talk about that on your show a little bit later. I need to get some feedback on anybody who's involved in the Tea Party movement.
Right, and I tell you one thing, you know, with things like the MIAC report being, you know, you would run out of Missouri, correct?
Yes.
So with things like the MIAC report being, you know, put out by the fusion centers there, you know, probably have a good idea to have someone like you in Congress. And when we come back on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock, with me, Jet Lacey, and John Ross, we're going to talk about it in just a second. Be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you?
Hey!
The Ernest Hancock Show.
There is a war going on for your mind. Media mavens mount surgical strikes from trapper keeper collages and online magazine racks.
CoverGirl cutouts throw up pop-up ads infecting victims with silicone shrapnel. Worldwide passenger pistons deployed paratroopers. Now it's raining pornography. Lovers take shelter. Post-production debutantes pursue you in NASCAR chariots. They construct ransom letters from biblical passages and bleed mascara into the holy water supplies. There is a war going on for your mind. Industry insiders slaying test tube babies to corporate crackheads. They flash logos and blast ghettos. They're embroidered neckties.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. My name is Jet Lacey. I'm filling in for Ernest today again. And this is my series, While the Cat's Away, the Mice Will Play series, that I got all these great pundits. I said, Ernie, if you're leaving me for a week, I'm going to take a little journey up and down your address book, and I'm going to give some of these people that I've wanted to talk to a call. And so that's how I ended up here talking to John Ross. And, you know, I'm really, again, really excited to have you on the air. And so to finish, you know, continue talking to us about a little bit about yourself and what you're all about, because unfortunately, you know, if you're not really a gunny or a freedom fighter, you know, some people may not have heard of you. So please enlighten us.
Okay. Well, I got involved in the Missouri concealed carry movement in 1991 when a good friend of mine and I decided that we were foolish to expect national organizations to fight a battle in our own backyard. So we reached for our checkbooks and hired a lobbyist and drafted a bill and got it moving through the legislature. And there were a lot of bumps along the way, but kept moving and kept getting more and more support and kept fending off anti-gun legislation in the state. And ultimately got concealed carry passed in 2003, a good concealed carry bill, which actually our permit is now good in more states than any other permit issued anywhere in the U.S.
Oh, my goodness. How many states?
35.
Oh, my goodness. So if you have a concealed carry permit from the state of Missouri, you are entitled to concealed carry in 35 states.
Correct.
Wow.
And what happened was, as we were fighting this fight and also fending off any further restrictions, people would ask me to speak in front of big groups. And I've always been a big believer that there really isn't anything new under the sun, that history repeats itself, and we've seen this kind of thing before. And I started telling people that, you know, you shouldn't feel upset that there are people trying to take away your liberties, because that always happens throughout history. And I would give examples of the Bonus Army March and the MOVE incident in Philadelphia, where the mayor had his people drop a bomb on an apartment building and burn 10 square blocks to the ground and that sort of thing. And I found out that I was not reminding people of things. I was giving them new information that they didn't know. And someone said that I should write a history book, and my response was that would be one more book that almost nobody would read. And I said at the time, what we need is for a novelist like Ken Follett, who specializes in historic fiction, where we have fictional characters living through real-life events, and then something else takes a turn, that we need somebody like him to write a story that would incorporate all these things and be an entertaining read. And I realized that Ken probably has a lot on his plate, but I thought I'd take a crack at it. And that's how the book Unintended Consequences came to be, and it's now in its seventh printing.
So yeah.
That's done better than I expected.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I tell you what, when here in the downtown Freedoms Phoenix activism studio we have, you know, I was in, you know, Ernie and I, a lot of times when we were building the studio, you know, we were just here working by ourselves because I got in trouble with marijuana. I'm not, so I can't be an RN any longer. So I got to do something with my time, and not really as a felon. Everybody's out of work now, and felons are probably at the bottom of the list. So I said, I got to do something with my time. And I started working down here with Ernie as a new activist. And he said, if you want to understand how I think that the coming fighting part of the revolution is going to occur, you need to read this book. And I went and I found the book and I started reading it. And as someone that, you know, is not a, you know, a gunny or anything like that, I didn't, you know, I guess I didn't appreciate my rights until I lost them. And I read that book and I didn't understand a lot of the technical aspects of it, but the story in and of itself was so very poignant to me. And so, you know, I didn't even really, never even thought about unintended consequences. And why did you choose these words as the title of your book? Because they seem to fit so well.
Well, there is the law of unintended consequences, which has always been something I've been very aware of. And that is when you're trying to accomplish something, unless you really think it through, if you have a simplistic view, you're probably going to get bitten by something that you hadn't thought of. And many of us have seen this happen often enough that we can predict that kind of thing. I'll give you a simple example. Under Bill Clinton, a luxury tax was enacted on expensive discretionary purchases, one of which was yachts over a certain dollar value. And it only applied to purchases of new yachts. And the thinking was, simplistic thinking, that, hey, anybody that can afford a yacht has got a ton of money. And if we hit them with an extra 10%, you know, we'll collect a bunch of money for the government, and that'll be about the only consequence. Well, no. People who buy yachts who have lots of money probably have lots of money because they've been shrewd with their investment and purchasing decisions.
Correct.
And so what happened was that there was a free fall in purchases of new yachts over this, cut-off dollar value. And the people that were looking for yachts in that kind of price range switched their attention to the used market, where there's, you know, always a secondary market of people wanting to trade up or getting out of yachting or whatever. And so the result was that a number of companies that were successful manufacturing these expensive watercraft either laid off a majority of their employees or they went out of business. And putting people out of business and out of work was certainly not the intent of the luxury tax, but it was, in my mind, a very predictable to someone who understands elasticity of demand and other economic principles. It was a very predictable occurrence. And my book talks about quite a number of real-life events where what ultimately ended up happening was quite the opposite of the people's intent when they initially took these actions.
Right. I think I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
And I thought that was an appropriate title.
Right. And I think that, you know, with any time you have the human factor involved, you're going to have unintended consequences to just about everything that you do, because there's no way that any individual can foresee all possible outcomes.
Well, no, maybe not all possible outcomes, but logical ones based on knowledge of the way people react to things involving money. For example, if you were to decide you wanted to start a bank, and if this were a free market, you would probably say, well, I've got some money, but I certainly don't have enough to start a viable bank, so I'm going to go around to people who have money, and I'm going to sell them on the idea of going in with me and starting this bank. And if I can persuade a bunch of people to join with me, then we're going to have a business plan where we make loans to people who we believe can pay them back with interest, and our bank will be profitable.
Sure.
And if it isn't, it's going to go under, and I'm going to have a lot harder time with my next sales pitch for my business idea. And so let's say we start this bank and we start lending money. Well, we've got whoever we have, a team of people perhaps, figuring out which loans will be good to make and which ones we want to say, no thanks, we're not going to do that.
Well, hey, John, we'll jump right back into this when we get back on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock, with me, Jet Lacy. Be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. My name is Jet Lacy. I'm filling in for Ernest, and I have John Ross here on the line. And before we get cracking with that, we have a major action going on downtown because we have a motivational speaking seminar, the Zig Ziglar series, and we have a bunch of people that might need a little bit of our attention here as activists. We have Laura Bush. We have Colin Powell, and we have Rudy Giuliani right downtown. So, my man Drew Phillips just got back from checking it out down there. So tell us about how it's going on down there, Drew.
Man, it's like, I don't know, how many people can fit in U.S. Airways, the basketball center? However many people that is, that's how many people are getting propagandized right now downtown. I got in there for just a minute, and it was full. To the roof, basketball stadium. I mean, there were people, and the lines in the bathroom, man, wow, there were people out the door. I mean, it was crazy down there, and they're all there to get motivated, get propagandized, get I don't know what, but it was pretty scary. But we did our thing out on the curb and had some cool signs and the bullhorn out for a little while and passing out DVDs and doing our thing. And
so what kind of DVDs are you passing out?
They got like a four-disc set, right, Keith? Four? It's like For Liberty, Obama Deception, Freedom to Fascism, and then the 9/11 is Improbable Collapse, which is a really good a beginner film for people who don't know about 9/11 truth.
So you're giving people four DVDs.
Four DVDs in the packet, and there's also a little card in there that says some information about 9/11 and some additional websites and stuff and info they can get.
And so what kind of signs are you is down there on the streets?
The three profiteers, like the three musketeers, the three profiteers, Rudy, Rudy, Laura Bush, and Colin Powell. And they had some cool revolution ones, a little revolution logo we do. And with the guy throwing he's not throwing a Molotov cocktail, he's throwing a bouquet of flowers. So we're down there spreading love. So came back to get some more supplies and have lunch. And then we're going to go down when they all get out for lunch and give more information out during lunch.
So you guys have given out all the DVDs and things like that already?
Oh, no, we've got more DVDs to pass out. And most people this morning, when they would see the signs, they didn't really want to take the DVDs. So when we go back for lunch, we're just going to hit all the cars in the parking lot. So when they leave today, they'll leave with the DVD. And on it, and on the front, it says, Obama Deception. So that way, these people, they're neocons, so they don't like Obama. So they'll go home and they'll go, oh, yeah, I don't like Obama. And then they'll hopefully put it in there and get a full dose of what's going on.
So there's a lot of fun going on with our activism downtown, right?
I thought Tom was going to call in. He's still down there. We wanted to break for lunch and because everyone's inside and we weren't all able to get in, so we wanted to break for lunch and regroup and then go back down. But Tom said, "Man, leave me here. I'm going to keep on the bullhorn." And man, he didn't even need the bullhorn. He's out there screaming without it for a while. He's a loud guy. And then we gave him the bullhorn, and it got even worse.
There's so many things going on this week, and I don't mean to put you on hold, John. We're just, was it yesterday or the day before that they're trying to impose it? It's like what you were saying, John, earlier, a 2%. They're trying to give a 2% sales tax on food in Arizona when we are by far in the worst shape of any state in the union as far as having our budget overextended. And so the last thing that people really need is, and John, you were talking about a yacht thing, for the rich already, but there's going to be some unintended consequences of these people trying to tax the people that already don't have any money. So welcome back to the show. So I didn't mean to cut you off and kind of jump into something else, but please continue with what you were talking about.
Well, maybe I was going on too long, but my point was, if you have private people start a bank, you've got someone or some people overseeing who they make the loans to make sure that you don't make a lot of bad loans. Well, when the government gets involved and says, we want to make the American dream affordable to more people, and forces the bank, basically at gunpoint, to make loans that they wouldn't have before because they weren't confident they would be repaid, well, now you get people buying houses that can't afford them. And then you also, because it drives the price up as more houses are sold, you get speculators coming in, buying houses with nothing down, whatnot. And it was inevitable that we would have this subprime mortgage crisis and crash. That was inevitable to anybody who understands basic economics.
Yeah, we subscribe to the Austrian school around here, a lot of us, so we kind of understand that. And
but we've got people in government making these decisions, and they're not accountable. If I run a bank and my people make bad loans, then the bank fails, and people are going to, hold me accountable. If the government forces the bank to make bad loans, then, where are you now? The government is not results-driven like the private sector.
Right, because they don't have to worry about their balance sheet if,
that's the problem. And, Jay Leno, I think, said in one of his routines when we were having trouble finding suspected terrorists or people who were in the country illegally or had overstayed a student visa or whatnot, he said, why don't we put the people at Blockbuster in charge of this?
Right.
The people at Blockbuster track me down when I'm one day late with my video tape. Well, yeah, that's because it's in their financial interest.
That's
to
right.
Do so.
Hey, John, we got a long segment coming up. We'll be right back in just a minute.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. My name is Jet Lacy. I'm filling in for Ernest. He should be coming back today, but I still have a special show. Ernest was going to be back tomorrow, but I booked a special show, and all he had was Friday. I have Pastor Lindsey Williams on the show tomorrow talking with some new information about what the elites have in plan for us for the next year. And I'll tell you just a little hint, because I had him on the afternoon show on Monday. He is saying that the value of the dollar, and he was told this by an actual member of the elites, the global elites that you've heard of that you will never get a chance to meet, that the value of the dollar will go down conservatively 30%, and he believes 50% this year. So tune in tomorrow, because I think it's going to be a really, really great show. I love Pastor Williams. He's been proven right on so many occasions, so I hope you'll tune in. Well, John, welcome back, and please continue with what we were talking about. And we're talking about your book, and I do want to talk about your book, because it really is a life-changing experience for me, actually. I was very, very new to the movement, and like I said, Ernest told me, if you want to know how things are going to shake out, you read this book and you'll understand. And so I went and I read it and I was like, my goodness, and again, there's so much technical stuff on there that I'm still learning, because, my mom was a single mom and I didn't ever grow up around guns. And so, now that I'm around Ernest and all these other guys here, I'm sure getting a crash course. So please tell us again, I'd really like to talk about your book and how, what is the gun culture to you?
The gun culture is people who believe that there is a real overall benefit to society of their personally having and being skilled with small arms, a nation of riflemen, if you will.
Right.
And it's a culture based not just on an enjoyable hobby, although that is obviously part of it, but it's based in the understanding that this is our ultimate insurance against doomsday or tyranny, right, or whatever.
It's your natural right to defend yourself.
Right, and that the more people that are skilled and competent, the better. And the people in the gun culture may not be quite as widely knowledgeable about international things, but the Swiss model is, many of us believe the Swiss model is the one we should aspire to. That's where every community of over 100,000 people has to have a rifle range of 300 meters, where every able-bodied male has to have a machine gun in his house. And they are ready to be called on at any moment.
Right, like the Swiss Guard.
To defend Switzerland. And for that reason, you know, Switzerland hasn't fought a war in, I believe, something like 500 years. It's not because, we declare we're neutral and we just don't want to get involved in wars. No, it's much more involved than that.
Right, and it's not the mountainous terrain either. You know, right.
We've made provision to see that any invasion of Switzerland would be an utter disaster for the invaders.
Right, and you look at the Vatican in itself. Who protects the Vatican is called the Swiss Guard, and they are all Swiss citizens. And sure, they wear their fancy little outfits that kind of, you know, evokes a little bit of laughs, but those are people you just don't mess with. And they've been guarding the Vatican for a very long time.
Uh-huh.
So I was actually going to bring that up, and I'm so glad that you did. So why do you think that people need to arm themselves? You had alluded a little bit to that fact, but what does the Second Amendment mean to you?
Well, the Second Amendment, as I said before, is the ultimate insurance against tyranny. But there's something else that's a corollary to it, and I think that's equally important, and that is if you understand the Second Amendment and why it's so important, and if you are a member of the gun culture, then you are almost certainly to be a person who is self-reliant. And that, I think, is a great virtue. I admire people that can fix things. I admire people that don't have to call in specialists for every little thing that goes wrong in their lives because they can handle most of them. And I think that's something that we should all aspire to be. And that, I think, is the great fear among the statist people in our government, is they don't fear the gun. They fear the gun owner. They don't like people who say, hey, look, I'll take care of my own health insurance. I'll take care of my own personal security. You don't need to put hundreds of thousands more police on the street. You don't need to restrict the internet for the safety of my kids. I can do that very well myself, thank you, much better than you can. Look, just let me handle my own affairs and get out of my way, okay?
Right.
And that is a philosophy that is very troubling to people who gravitate to government because they want to control others.
Do you think at all of it could be part of just because, you know, well, there's a lot of propaganda against guns, and a lot of the television shows are actually, you know, done out of Los Angeles and New York, two states that have very, very restrictive and draconian gun laws. And so people tend to just believe that this is the way things are, because you can't carry a gun around in New York City. You can't carry a gun around in Los Angeles.
It's very difficult.
Right. I mean, I mean it like that. Of course you can.
The ordinary person can't do so legally.
Right. So, but the thing is they make it in the television and those types of programs that, you know, that is the norm, where in other parts of the country, like here, it's not.
Well, that may be true, that the television programs are portraying it inaccurately. But as a whole, particularly with the advent of the internet, the American people are not that stupid. When you find out that almost all states have concealed carry laws, and a vast majority of states shall issue easy-to-get concealed carry laws, and you think to yourself, well, gee, when I travel to Disney World with my family, am I trembling in fear as soon as I get off the plane? No. So maybe this whole thing about guns being so terrible and honest people having access to them being such a bad idea, maybe that doesn't hold water. I'm starting to see the evidence here of facts rather than fear. And that's ultimately how we got concealed carry in Missouri. And since we got the law, and it's been a little over 6 years, we have had absolutely no problems with it.
Right.
And that's what always happens. You know, you give people more freedom with responsibilities, and typically they don't abuse it. They only abuse it when they're able to because of their position of authority. And private citizens don't have much of a position of authority as, politicians and the police do.
Right. So my question to you is, and I understand, why is the right to concealed carry important to you as opposed to, say, like a open carry law where you can just walk around with it attached to your hip or something of the like?
Well, open carry is more dangerous for the same reason that, in Missouri at least, approximately two-thirds of the police officers in this state over the years who have been killed by criminals have been shot with their own guns. That, to my knowledge, has never happened to an undercover police officer. If it has, it's very, very rare. When you're walking around with a gun in a holster, someone can walk up behind you and snatch it. If you're walking around with a gun in your pocket, no one's the wiser. It's also important to understand that criminals don't think exactly like you and I do. They do have a logic, but it might not be our logic. You might think, if you walked into a convenience store and you saw a patron there with a gun and an exposed hip holster, that would be a deterrent to anyone robbing the convenience store. But a criminal bent on getting money from the cash register might just decide that that's the first guy he's going to shoot.
Right. Okay? And that makes a lot of sense.
So many people have not thought of that. It's one of those unintended consequences. But if you think things through, like what are the possible consequences of this action or this scenario, you might come to the conclusion I do, which is why I tell my students, it's much better to keep a lower profile and not make yourself out to be a potential target.
Right. And, I talked to you about this on the phone, but I say this on the air all the time that, I consider this show, when I sit in for Ernest, to be an education show. And it's not, the education is not just for the audience out there. A lot of times it's for me too. And so
that's what happens when you're a teacher. A lot of times you learn more than the student.
Absolutely. And so if I ask you these kind of simple questions, it's only out of wanting to understand and to reach out to people that, you know, may be kind of curious. They see things. If you're listening to Republic Broadcasting, you know, and not the mainstream media, chances are you probably understand that there's something going on in this country that's just not quite right. And so when I ask you these types of questions, I really want it to be like an educational opportunity for both me and the listeners. And so with that being said, you know, if someone does take the opportunity, you know, and decides to take the first step to arm themselves, you know, how should they go about doing that? You know, say someone doesn't have any, you know, prior knowledge.
Well, then you would do what you would, a logical person would do in any situation where he wanted to be competent in an area that he was currently unfamiliar with, and that would be to seek out the people who are exceptional at what he wants to master. I don't know exactly how to tell you to do that in your area, but you would try to seek out the person like me that was in Phoenix or wherever you're broadcasting from. And find out what he had to offer. Does he have a class? Does he offer any free advice? You could always look on the internet and look for people who've written stuff about, here's, you know, people have asked me, and I've written pieces like this. They've said, John, what would you advise a person to do if he wanted to become competent or thought he might want to become competent in the use of firearms? What advice would you give him? And I wrote about a 2 or 3 page article about it. If you're starting from ground zero, here's what I would advise you to do. And if you decide it's not for you, sell the stuff that I told you to buy in the first place for a $300 loss, and at least you've learned something. But it was about how to acquire basic skills that could later be turned into more advanced skills.
Right.
And the good thing about firearms is they're not like trying to learn to play the violin or the piano. It's a lot simpler than that. I do advise formal instruction, just so that the problem with being self-taught is quite often you pick up bad habits that are very hard to unlearn if you've been doing them for a long time. But there are people who study what works best in just about all areas of human endeavor, from, you know, from painting a wall to piloting an airplane to shooting a basketball hoop and using a gun. And the people who have studied this for, in some cases, centuries, have figured out what works best and what doesn't so well. And as I tell my students, I say, is it possible for me to hold a basketball in one hand with my palm up and throw it in the basket and get it in? And of course, the answer is yes. I said, have you ever seen a pro basketball player intentionally make a shot like that? And they said, well, no, or extremely rarely. And the reason for that is basketball is a, you know, big-time competition, and people are paid a lot of money to figure out what's the most effective way to score points and not having them be blocked. And these people have figured out what works best. So find yourself somebody like that in whatever field of endeavor you want to get better at, and learn.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for that. And when we come back on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock, with me, Jet Lacy, and my special guest, John Ross, we're going to jump right back into this when we get back in just a few minutes. Hold on.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Whoa. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. My name is Jet Lacy, and I'm filling in for Ernest for today and one more day. And we have a very special guest, John Ross, the author of Unintended Consequences, here with us. And we're talking about what people do in order to take the first step in order to become a little bit more comfortable with the gun culture. You know, and John has spoken quite a bit about the gun culture. He talked to us about what it is and how it's a benefit to society. And just like the Swiss, our country was set up where every person was meant to be the part of the militia. The militia meant every able-bodied man and boy that was able to hold a gun and so desired to do so. It was their responsibility to protect the general population of which the area that they lived. So these things are not 100% foreign to the American culture. It's just become so more and more as of late. And, you know, there's varying reasons why, you know, and again, like Thomas Jefferson said, there's not supposed to be a standing army in the United States in times that aren't declared war. There is supposed to be, everybody is responsible for taking care of their community themselves. And that's part of the reason why I brought up the food tax that they're trying to bring in the city of Phoenix, because they want to pay, they want to take literally money out of the food, the food out of the mouth of people that are just trying to make a living in order to keep the police in their jobs. And that's really, really a sad state of affairs. So we're talking to John Ross, and we're talking about the gun culture, and there's a natural progression, you know, and I wanted to ask you, talking about unintended consequences, and we started talking about the book and what it's about. Can you give us a little synopsis in the few minutes that we have in this segment of your book?
Sure. It's about the culture of freedom versus the culture of state control. That's it in one sentence. What we have in the book is fictional characters observing and in some cases living through some real life events in American history. And when we get to the present day section of the book, which is set in the immediate future, i.e., you know, next week, we have a young man that we've watched grow up who's now in early middle age, and he's a part of the gun culture. He's an expert shot, and shooting sports have always been very important to him. And he's alone at a friend's place in rural Indiana one night, preparing some stuff that he's got to get done for work before he leaves and joins his friend on vacation, and sees an armed gang breaking into the friend's house. He's out in an outbuilding in the shop and believes that his friend is being robbed by a gang of criminals. And the sheriff is quite a ways away, and he realizes he's outnumbered, and all he can do is use the element of surprise and his skills to stop these people. And he does so, and when he interrogates the survivors, discovers that he stopped not an armed gang of criminals, but an illegal federal raid where the raiders were intending to plant evidence and use the asset forfeiture laws to take everything his friend had. Well, what does he do now? He can't just turn himself in. That would be a death sentence or life in prison or whatever. So he uses his resources to show confusion.